Welcome to the ARUG Zen Center podcast. Our talks and discussions are offered for free to anyone who is interested in the ancient wisdom tradition of Zen. If you find these recordings to be of benefit, please consider donating to ARUG through our website, www.zenwave.org. Thank you for listening and for your kind support.
Okay, thank you all for coming, for being here, for being there. So today we continue with Shantideva's teaching from the book we've been using, and that's The Way of the Bodhisattva, but different commentaries. Last Sunday, we ended with the part that deals with how to treat the body. And in the commentary, the last line of the commentary reminds us that denigrating the body is as futile and as much a distraction as pampering the body, right? So rejecting or pampering is the same in terms of what this is talking about. And this next part continues along the same line of how to treat the body. And it says, regard your body as a vessel, a simple boat for going here and there. Make of it a wish-fulfilling gem to bring about the benefit of beings. Now, commentary. This is, without question, the main point. Trungpa Rinpoche often spoke about the importance of respecting the body and paying attention to all the details of our lives. In his Shambhala's teaching, eating and dressing well are ways of perking ourselves up and developing confidence in our basic goodness. It's a fine line, however, between taking pride in our appearance and being obsessed with it, right? It's a fine line between taking pride in our appearance and being obsessed. We can very quickly become obsessed with it. Upliftedness is a way of expressing our human dignity. Obsession is a way of wasting our lives. Gradually, we get clear about this difference. So I'm going to continue to the next part, but if you have something to say about that, remember it and bring it up. So the next part talks about becoming aware of our impact on people around us and on our environment, from our physical expression to the way we communicate with other people. So, thus, with free, untrammeled mind, put on an ever-smiling countenance. Rid yourself of scowling, wrathful frowns, and be true and honest friend to all. It's a tough one. It sounds great, but it is a big challenge. And then in the commentary, Pema says, our facial expressions have quite an impact. When someone has a wrathful expression, it affects us, even if it has nothing to do with us. Right? Even if it, and how do we know when it has something to do with us, right? Even if it has nothing to do with us, we feel threatened. We take this scowl or frown very personally. Although no words are spoken and we may not even know this scowling person, we may feel deeply threatened, wounded, or scorned. This may be ridiculous, but it happens. While an ever-smiling countenance may seem a bit extreme, a friendly expression makes people feel more comfortable than scowling, wrathful frowns. So let's take a few minutes and look at that in connection to the previous part, right? So obviously we go through all kinds of challenges, right? All kinds of emotional entanglements, karmic streams, right? And we feel things, we experience things internally. And those internal things manifest, right, externally. So what this is talking about is continuous examination of our state of mind, state of being, and then recognizing those energies as they develop, right, and then intercepting the automatic line, right, continuous line between such states of being and our facial expressions. Or body language, right? So often it is not, we don't even see a gap, right? We feel something, we express it right away, the face, right? It comes out. So how can we, what can help, what helps you? Well, let me ask it differently. Do you want to do it first? We have to begin with that, right? Is it important for us, right? One second. Is it important for us? That's one, right? And if, and two, if it is important for us, then the question of how do I, what works for me to intercept that automatic pattern between a crappy state of being, right? And that kind of an expression. What helps us? Yes.
I think
maybe one thing I would ask you is to raise the volume, please.
Can when you speak. Hear me? Okay. I feel like we're not often aware of the negative state that we're in. We just are automatically, there's some kind of automatic button that's like, you know, I have to do this again, you know? And there's this state of negativity that's kind of underlying. I mean, you may be smiling, you may feel like part of you is happy, but there's always this part of you underlying that's like, you know, unhappy. So just as an example, you know, in my classroom, especially the classroom I teach now, it's all about behavior and how the reactions that I get from the kids. And so there's this one student who's always considered particularly difficult and negative. And I walked, when I came to the classroom in the beginning of the year, everybody around her was like, kind of like that, you know, get away from me, kind of like that. They were very negative about her. And then as time went on, I saw some behaviors that, you know, were not acceptable, obviously. It's expected in that classroom. I've been, I remember the first time I tried to turn it around because I realized she's using this negativity, but she's manipulating with it, but she's also feeling it fairly deeply. And so I looked at her and I said, what a beautiful frown you have. and then she kind of like, the corners of her mouth creeping up, and then she was laughing. And if you can find a way inside yourself to turn it around, like realize, I could be in a negative state right now. And I could be feeling better just by turning the energy around or forcing myself to turn the energy around. It feels like forcing at first. It feels like I have to, you know, but once you do it, everything lightens up. And that's what I learned from her. So.
Right. So to change it, right. And to change the direction. And not to take it, the thing is how we take it, right? So because often we take things personally, as she says in the commentary, right? But the thing is, it's easier with kids, it's much more difficult with adults, right? It's a lot more difficult with adults because our expectations of adults are very different, right? So we may need to look at that. But not to take things personally, right? So first of all, not to do it ourselves, right? Or to work on our expressions, that's one. Two is to examine how we react to other people's expressions, right? And without trying to understand or explain, what's going on, because we don't know what's going on, right? Somebody may be frowning, maybe walking around with heavy energy, heavy and negative energy, right? And it's just a fact. Now, how do we react to that, right? So, and sometimes, you know, when we look at how we feel, it can help us in the way we interact with other people, because this is what we project. So if we feel this negativity, we have to realize that when we are in such states of mind, we express the same negativity, which means we can learn, right, by our own experiences that this is toxic and this is impactful, right? Which means I don't want to do this to others. Now, I don't want to do this to others requires me to be in touch with my state of mind, especially when it becomes negative, and then know how to quell. Back to the beginning of this, right? We talked about knowing how to be silent and still. right? And knowing how to be silent still is knowing how to not allow the facial expressions express the state of being, and then taking the responsibility to work on it at the same time. Koji.
I guess this part of the commentary is talking about, what you are projecting out, right? And what Myogen's example was what another person was projecting out. So I guess the question is, or the notion that I'm thinking about is that if you approach these situations from a perspective of not knowing, mm-hmm. right? You don't know why the person is scowling, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But we want to fill in all those gaps mm-hmm. and create a story for ourselves. So I guess the point is we don't have to be a mirror for that energy, right? We don't have to absorb that energy. We don't have to take that energy in. Because if we approach the other person from a perspective of not knowing, and we don't know what's going on with them. You know, we don't know why they're scowling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know why they're upset. We don't know any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no reason for me to take that energy in because it has nothing to do with me. You know, unless I caused it, you know, unless it was a situation where I, you know, directly caused them pain.
Mm-hmm.
But, so if you approach it from a perspective of not knowing, there's no real reason to take that energy in. The energy's there, it comes to you, you know, and then it dissipates. Versus taking the energy in and then reflecting it back, you know, in that same sort of negative scowl, right? You know, and it has to do a lot with expectations. You talked about that. We have expectations of adults,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah, but why? Adults are children too, right? Children can do things that seem like adults. Adults can do things that seem like children. So why do we have those expectations, right? And then from that perspective of not taking that energy in, just letting it, you know, just like random thoughts in Zazen, let them come and let them go. Let the energy arise and let it dissipate. There's no reason we need to reflect it back.
Right, but there's no reason, but the reason is what she's saying, you're taking things personally, and this is a big one, right? So the question is, why do we take things personally? That's so we can talk about that for a few minutes. Right, but you say there's no reason. The expectation, and this is the thing, we expect everybody to be enlightened, at least when they're around us, right? We expect everybody to be done with their stuff, figure everything out, and then that's it. And now when you show up fully enlightened and
stop wasting my time.
Exactly, right. So there is that expectation. Obviously, it's not reasonable, right? But there is such expectation that everybody should figure out their stuff already, right? You've done it enough times or whatever, right? But this is the thing, right? So you say to see it in another, see it in ourselves, it's the same thing as far as the teacher, right? To see it in another and feel what it does and to feel it ourselves and examine how we project it, it's the exact same teacher from both sides.
Right.
Right? Because we are taught the same lesson. Right? So, and we can learn from seeing the other. Do you want to comment on that? I want to see if others want to say.
Just briefly, I feel like it's different when it comes to people doing their jobs. So everybody projecting their negativity onto this kid because she projected her negativity onto mm-hmm. them. They took it very personally. But that's in terms of their job and what do you do from there. But that's another conversation.
No, right. But it's always complex.
Yeah.
It's always complex. It's always very layered. But what's not layered is the immediate intercepting of that, right? That could be on the spot. It has nothing to do with what we know or don't know. The practice, what we're talking about, this is talking about, has nothing to do with how much we know about the other person. It doesn't matter, right? And the thing is also taking things personally, which I want to see where we're at with that. It has everything to do with how I am with myself. It has nothing to do with anybody. Anybody, it doesn't matter. People give you the finger or whatever. There's nothing to do. It's not them causing anything. It's me already feeling a certain way about myself, and that finger reminded me how I feel about myself. I don't want you to remind me this, because I have enough of that, right? So go away. And that's the thing, right? If I can recognize that the work is on me, not the expectation of another, then it turns it around completely. Doesn't matter how people behave. Well, it does matter, but it doesn't matter in terms of working on that. Right? So, yeah. Why do you take things personally? Yes.
I think that's the crux of it. When you say, you know, we're not a mirror, I believe we actually are. And it's not an energy that we're feeling. They're not projecting anything. As a matter of fact, so many times, I believe what we're seeing is a misunderstanding. Somebody could be crossing their arms and it looks like they're closed off, but their arm hurts. Or they're not smiling because they're just not smiling and they're lost in thought. But what we consider to be a scowl or a frown, you know, I just came back from India. That means a billion people were scowling at me. I mean, everyone that wasn't a dominant feature of them smiling, it was the culture. The second I smiled, they lit up like the sun. And I could have judged them all like they hate me. It was me. So, and when you ask the question why, it's a habit energy that I've had since, you know, you trace it back. And the work is within me. I have to find out where, right, that manifested, where that was cultivated. And in that, when I sit with it, and I look at it, I understand I am the one creating. Until that person actually states something or says something, you know, there is nothing there. I have manifested all of that, and we get back to our minds. And in our minds, I create all my own pain, all my own sorrow, and my own suffering. And the work I feel is so much here, coming back to the present, coming back to where I am, and really being moment by moment, saying, I don't know what is there, let me find out, let me say hello, let me... Now, the moment the finger comes up, or I don't want to talk to you, then you're pretty crystal clear that this conversation isn't going to go any farther.
Right.
But even that, was that about me? No, that person, obviously, there's something within them.
Right.
And I can still love them, and I can just remove myself or whatever. So, you know, it is an amazing thing. This touches on a subject that's near and dear to me and caused me so much suffering in my own life, thinking everyone just looked down on me. Everyone, when, you know, just, it was me. Just feeling a certain way, so.
Thank you. Can you just bring it back? Thank you. So there is a question of, a very important question of worthiness, right? Self-worthiness, right? Because if we are at ease or at peace with ourselves, that question does not exist, actually. It's not sticky at all, right? It may come and go, but it's not a question anymore, right? The question of worthiness, right? So, for example, bowing, right? Prostrations, the practice of prostrations, right? So the way to practice prostrations is to again and again embody equality, right? It is the embodiment, the practice of embodiment of equality. The ground equalizes all things. So putting the forehead on the ground, we have to be reminded that everything and everybody is equally worthy. There is no question of worthiness. We get up, the question comes back up, right? So we practice again and again, going back to equality, realizing again and again, recognizing we're all one, we're all the same. We're all the same in different ways. But the fact that we are different or have different karmic entanglements doesn't make us more or less worthy. It's the meaning that we assign to it that makes it appear this way. And it's a very important point because Zazen is that. Is a practice for us to recognize that the question of worthiness is not, the question of worthiness is a question that we have made up. It does not exist in reality. It does not exist in nature, right? There is no such thing. You look around, you go in the forest, there is no argument of worthiness. between trees and shrubs and squirrels and mice and all that. This is just being. Everything is teaching that, except for us, right? We create something and we believe it to be true. So if we can get to a point that the question of worthiness becomes less important for us, right? And something else becomes more important, right? Then it changes everything. And so that something else becoming more important has to do with paying attention to others, teaching ourselves to be unconditional with others. Unconditional. And being unconditional with ourselves, which is the same thing, right? To fully be unconditional, to not ask, am I worthy? Buddhism 101, you're a Buddha, you were born that way. That's not in question. The question is, how do I express that? Now, if I express that through a frown, what does that do? If I can smile, what does that do? And the other thing about smiling, by the way, this talks about smiling, it's not one direction. It's not just affecting the others, it's affecting you right away. Immediately starting to affect you. There was this experiment, I talked about that with Sugiyoko on Friday. There was this experiment I read a long time ago. They took two groups of people, two separate rooms, they exposed them to stressors. And then one group of people, they told them to hold a pencil in their mouth like this. Just hold a pencil in your mouth. And the two groups reacted very differently to the stressors because this is a smile. They didn't tell them to smile. They told them to hold a pencil in their mouth. But the mind recognizes that gesture as things are good, things are okay. I can calm down. So there's a lot of power to facial expressions. How do I carry myself? How do I walk as well? It's not just the face, it's the entire body. Right? So, yeah. Go ahead. If you can project your voice.
It's funny how you just mentioned that because I just showed that to my class. We've watched it's on TED talk.
Yeah.
It's a talk about body language and, you know, how we communicate with each other. Because
right.
I teach a whole bunch of women and sometimes the body language in there is, you know, not the most positive. And they trigger each other and I stand there and I watch like the ping pong going back and forth in the classroom. And this is adults. And she was talking about that, about the pencil and of course if you smile, it also changes your body chemistry. And then they let these people go into a room to get, to get a job, like to do a...
Interview,
yes. To do an interview, and all the ones that held a pencil in their mouth, they wanted to hire them, and the ones that did not showed a different type of body language, and they did not feel confident hiring them. They said, no, I want to hire, you know, the ones, and they couldn't understand why. They didn't, you know, they were all qualified and everything, but the ones that were smiling and holding the pencil showed up like, you know, were more confident, more authentic and everything else, while the other ones were showing less confidence so it was very useful to show like the classroom. You guys are gonna be going for an interview when you finish here and this is how you need to start working on how you portray your body language, how you're communicating with other people and don't take things so personally because that's what they do. That's what I do, we all do it. And what helps me is that I try to think about whatever the other person's projecting, that's their story.
Mm-hmm.
What I hear, it's mine. So how I react to it has to do with the story of I'm creating for myself and how I'm feeling about myself that day. And you know, my confidence and the space that I'm occupying.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to think about that. And it immediately, there's certain things that really do trigger you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, okay, if I'm believing what that person's saying, why is it bothering me?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question I said, why is it bothering me? What about that statement or that body language or what they said, why is it triggering me? Like, what is it bringing out in me that I need to work?
Mm-hmm. Right. So here's the thing. You know, we come in with dormant annoyance. Wherever we go, right, there is already dormant annoyance in us. The fact that somebody pushes a button and then triggers it doesn't mean that it's from them, right? We have all kinds of emotions and states of being already there, dormant, right? And somebody does something or says something, and then it brings it about, right? And if you don't recognize it as such, then of course we're going to point a finger and say it's the other. But we carry everything within us. We carry the capacity to love. We actually carry the capacity to hate as well. It's the same, right, in terms of capacity. So the question is, what kind of capacities am I expressing, right? There's that. The other thing is, we always permeate. We have to remember, we always permeate. We always are walking around giving gifts. That's not in question. We are giving gifts wherever we go, because we're not shut like that. There are no walls separating. Right, just the mind makes it appear that way. So we have to recognize that wherever I go, I am leaving something behind. I am giving something to other people. So since that's the case, there is a question of, what do I want to give to others? Is that what I want to give? Right? And that's the point. This is what this is trying to raise, the recognition that we always affect one another. It's very important to be reminded of it, because we forget. We forget, and then we go into our own little cocoon and then continue to think about ourselves. And while we do that, we are affecting other people. It's very important, right? So, yeah, we have to work with that on the go, on the go. Anyone else before we continue? Anyone on Zoom? Yeah, Hoju. Yes.
Try to speak loudly. In a similar way as others, but recently I had a family member on two separate occasions. I think my sister, you know, family members.
Stay there.
But she said, after I saw her, she goes, "You looked really stressed. Everything okay?" I go, "Yeah, I think I was fine, you know, but I realized it was really my scowl. And I think I was just so intent on, you know, focused on whatever I was thinking about the day, and really wasn't stressed, but in that way I was annoyed. I said, yeah, everything was fine, but I was annoyed that she had asked me that if I was stressed." You know, people ask, "Are you okay?" So now when you're, you know, discussing this, it makes me realize, like, wow, I could have said even thank you for paying attention to what you might have been feeling towards me, but I was annoyed. And in realization, you know, now I'm thinking, you know, maybe I should have been more intent on what I was doing in that moment, which was really a happy occasion. But yet, it really makes me think about, and smiling so often just makes me feel better.
Right.
So I'll focus a little bit more on the breath and the smile.
Yeah, it's a wonderful antidote, right? Available all the time. And how often we are very stingy with it, right? And it's amazing, right? Because we think it's about others. I don't want to give that, but it is. It works both ways. Yeah, thank you. Anyone else? Sugiyoko, you have something? Yeah, please.
If I had to depends on the person, how willing I am to smile when or put out something friendly when I'm feeling very down or negative. So with my husband there on Zoom, I try not to let my moods affect him. But then there are times I want him to know how bad I feel. But then I go out for a walk in the neighborhood, and I see a neighbor, and I can be very funky. But I see the neighbor, and a genuine smile comes, and I start talking to them about neighborhood things, and it's just interesting.
Interesting, and?
it's a big thing to work on.
Right.
I'm trying to remember to go around with a pencil in my mouth. So
they may mistake you for a carpenter, right?
It's a measure.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, Jifu.
Morning. This just reminds me of the importance of daily practice. And that's because sometimes when I'm at work, I take 10 minutes and I step off my unit and I go and I meditate and we have a reflection moment. And I've been told by the few people that know what I do when I'm missing, I've been told they can tell in my body that I walk differently, my composure is different, my facial expression is different. And so if other people can identify that so readily, it just encourages me to be sure that I'm centering myself every day so that I can bring that kind of peacefulness into the world.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Jifu. Yes, so the practice cannot start when we get annoyed, right? Or when we feel what we feel. The practice has to be continuous, right? So we sit and we practice, but then we get off the cushion, and then the post-Zazen practice is very, very important, right? Because if we keep the finger on the pulse, we know our state of mind before the annoyance is appearing in us, right? Before the trigger is being triggered, right? Before the person shows up and will do what they do. So then we are already preemptively practicing, working on it, working on on coming back to some level of ground or homeostasis or connected, inner connectedness, right? And then maintaining that on the go. Every breath, every step. Thank you. Anyone else, or we move on? We're good, okay. Keigo.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm just kind of on this thing that Raison and Hongju from, Black Street. There's something about maintaining the smile, and it's like when someone close to me, like a sister or like a partner that I live with or something like that, is like, oh, like you seem stressed, or like what's wrong? Then I relate to that kind of annoyed reaction where it's like, there's something wrong. What do you want me to do? Like smile all the time? Like I'm just fine. I'm just, there's something about that and about like thinking about smiling where with some people I have this reaction, and then if I like am walking around the neighborhood and I happen to run into a friend, then I'm like effortlessly, like immediately smiling because I'm like, oh, what a surprise! Like, what gift? Like, you're outside, I'm outside, like, what's up today? And so I'm just thinking about like, there are times or there are people with which I like have this put upon this where I'm like, where I feel like you just want me to smile all the time or whatever. But then there are like other moments with other people where I just feel more connected to that kind of like, it's not like someone asking you to smile, it just like naturally happens because you're happy to see them. So that's just where I'm at. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, sometimes we just don't want to give up our annoyance because we are quite attached to it, right? We have strong relationships with all those emotions, and we don't like it and we like it at the same time, right?
Yeah.
It's familiar. It's a familiar grouchiness kind of thing.
Or I don't see the choice.
I don't see the choice, right. So
yeah, like it doesn't seem like a choice at that time when I'm so merged with the emotion.
So when the fist is very tight like that, right, as you described.
Oh, no, you can open it.
Right. That's true. But then it could be, first of all, it could be an inner, you can begin to smile internally, right? And also it could be just a slight faint smile, right? Another thing is examining the facial muscles, right? The tightness of the facial muscles, to be in touch with that. Because, you know, sometimes we do that, right? We clench and we don't even know, right? We don't even know. So becoming aware of that, right? So in a way, leaving the thoughts alone and going to the body and then through the body affecting the mind rather than try to figure out what's going on. Why am I annoyed? You know, I should not be annoyed, all that. That's just more thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. But if you go directly to the expression itself or the manifestation of the annoyance and you work with that, you can affect the mind, the state of being. It's a very immediate, the body is a very immediate access point. It's a wonderful access point. Right? Yeah. Oh, he's just stretching. Okay. Yes.
I was just going to mention, you know, the difference between social smiling, you know, in society.
Right.
You know, you're out there and forcing yourself really to smile at everybody just because it's socially acceptable.
Yes.
But to feel a smile inside. Like Thich Nhat Hanh says.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes you look at photos of people smiling, right? Try that. So cover the lower part of the face and look at the eyes.
Yeah.
And if you look at the eyes, you will not see a smile if the smile is fake. The eyes will not smile. The mouth will smile, but not the eyes.
True.
Try that. Look at that. Look at the fake politician smile, for example, right? Not all, but some. Yeah. Raise the volume.
I'm in my second marriage, but my previous marriage, my ex-husband always had a frown on his face all the time. So right. I always felt that he was always angry at me, the children, the house, everything. So when he was out of the house, music's on, TV's on, kids are running, playing. As soon as we heard the car pulled up, TV went off, radio went off, everything, and my kids were like, In the room, and I couldn't smile. Reason being that if he came home annoyed from work and everybody's happy, of course everybody, you guys are all happy. You're home, doing this and that. I'm the one that has to go out there and work and make the money, deal with the traffic, deal with this. So before he started coming in and saying that, we were like, okay, nobody, daddy's coming, the kids, daddy would come home, they all split to their own rooms, and it was like, and I'm like, oh my God, he had us all so conditioned. We were fine. Mm-hmm. We were happy, had a good time gardening, playing.
Yeah.
As soon as he came home, we were not allowed to be happy.
Yeah.
Because he was miserable. And then we felt that. So I figured before he comes in and yells, let's all be miserable with him. Let's join him. Let's join him so that way he can feel better about himself. Hey, I'm not the only one that's miserable. Everybody in the house is miserable. So.
Right.
Yeah, it was. You couldn't. If you smiled, you had a problem.
Crazy. Yeah, right? It is. It's contagious either way, right? So both directions.
One way or the other, but.
Right.
Yeah.
So continuing on, do not acting inconsiderately, move furniture and chairs so noisily around. Likewise, do not open doors with violence. Take pleasure in the practice of humility. And then commentary, if we live with other people, these are important guidelines. We gather virtue when we are considerate about how our actions affect the environment. Now, other people are not, right? So this is talking about the practice of attention, but also to be gentle. So it says, you know, to do not open doors with violence. It means to be gentle, right? And, you know, we talk about that, whether it's doors here or sishins. And some of you know, people come into Dokusan sishin, they slam the door, I tell them to go out and come back again. Or not come back. But and try again, right? And then, you know, it's not, so we go into Dokusan, for example, right? We go in and the mind is interested in the discussion and I'm completely bypassing this part of my life. So I should not be gentle now. I should not be paying attention now. I should be paying attention later when something I'm expecting will arrive. What about all the in-betweens, right? And, you know, this is where life happens, right? Moment by moment. So how we move, this is talking about how we move. It's also how our appreciation, right? So slamming door is expressing something. We may not know, but we are expressing something, right? So how about dealing with it with gentleness, right? And offering something to another with two hands, not just one, right? We hold a cup of tea, right? And we talk about sometimes with two hands. You bring it gently to your mouth and you drink with appreciation, with awareness, with gratitude to have tea, right? With care for others. But care is not... Care, the practice of care has nothing to do with self or other. It's just the practice of care, period. So we can always practice care. Regardless of what we think or what the mind thinks about the object we are interacting with or the person we may be interacting with, that's always secondary to the fact that we choose to practice care, then practice care unconditionally with everything and everybody. Care and gentleness, right? So, any quick word about that, or are we on the same page? Sounds good? Okay. All right. When useful admonitions come unasked to those with skill in counseling their fellows, let them welcome them with humble gratitude and always strive to learn from everyone. Again, a tough one, right? So in the commentary, he says, getting feedback is sometimes the only way to discover our blind spots, especially when that feedback stings, right? Whether it's meant to be mean or helpful feedback, feedback has a way of getting us to look at things we don't want to see. If we resent it or close our ears, our blind spots will never be revealed. So always strive to learn from everyone, but know that ultimately you are the only one who really knows when you're stuck. So, and this is important, right? How do we receive words from others, right? Regardless of what we may think the words are saying, right? Looking at what it is pointing at. I may not be seeing something here. Right, I may be off. There are blind spots. Am I open to receive that? Right, and of course the answer to that has again everything to do with my worth, my idea of worthiness. Right, if my worthiness is based on knowledge, things I do, things I have not done, or whatever, right, on the structure, then I am going to be very careful trying to make sure that nobody will hurt that structure, because this structure is me. If somebody says, wait a minute, you know, look over there, there's a problem there. It's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Right? So it's not as simple as, okay, I'm going to take a look at it and see what's going on. It feels as if somebody is messing with my being, with my value, with my sense of self. Right, because we become attached to this.
And
so
we feel like we need to defend it, right?
Absolutely.
So someone may give you like really good advice.
Yeah.
That stings.
Yeah.
But you're like, I don't want to hear that.
No.
Yeah. Because I got this, and I have to, you know, you can't mess with this, like you said. So I see it a lot of other times in defensive reactions.
Yeah. Defensiveness is an incredible teacher. An incredible teacher, because he's teaching us exactly what we have become attached to.
Yep.
Whatever we think we have to be defensive of is exactly what we need to turn the flashlight towards and see. What's going on here? Why? And what happens? And things, what am I losing if I am allowing that to come in and examine? What's at stake here now, today? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to...
but the greatest teacher is the point, right?
Yeah, so, but thinking of it in terms terms of feedback was really helpful when you used the word feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I know words shouldn't make that much of a difference, but you know, I think of things in terms of either criticism or praise.
Mm.
And anything that like that, I color it. And I'm like, what are you saying? I can't do this. No, I can do that. No, I did that already. What are you talking about? You know, so I can go off for a long time. But that term feedback is really important too. It's kind of like, you know, when dolphins throw out their echolocation and they need to hear something back to see what's going on, you know?
Yeah, we have to be open, right? We have to be open to receive, right? So,
it's
yes.
Like sending a signal out and then you're getting something back. Maybe this can work better.
Right, and that again, the question of openness. Am I willing to examine? Now, the previous part, it's the last line said, take pleasure in the practice of humility. Take pleasure in the practice, and this sums it up, right? If we take pleasure in the practice of humility, we're not going to be concerned with defending anything. That's not, you know, it's like, okay, no problem. What's going on here? What am I not seeing? What is the blind spot? Maybe that's true. And the other thing is, why are we so averse to learning, to deepening, to improve on things, right? Why not continue to deepen our spiritual process? Right? Isn't that what we're here to do? To continue to learn until we die, not to continue to learn until we graduate. Right? So not knowing is always greater than knowing. And there are always going to be blind spots. Practice 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, there will be blind spots. It's not wrong, right? So take pleasure in the practice of humility, right? And again, this is why we chose to walk with that amazing text, because it all goes back to that, right? And directly related to our theme. Anybody that has not said anything yet, because we are wrapping it up.
And maybe something really short.
Last chance. Yes, thank you.
I think when I think about feedback, there's, and kind of what Jungian said, you can, at least for me, I think there's two main paths of the reaction. One is you go into defensive combat mode. I can do anything. I can prove you wrong. The other is equally problematic or equally a good signal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like withdrawing.
Right.
You know, some parent's complaining about something I'm coaching or something, you know, I don't need to do this next year, you know, what's the point, you know?
Right.
And, yeah, I think that's just as good a teacher. It's the same thing.
Yeah, so, right, it's the same thing. So then this is revealing, right? I don't want to do it, I don't need to do it, you know, whatever. Right, so, and this is the exactly that, right? So when we, every time the thought has a strong me in it, then it is revealing something that I need to work on. It is revealing my attachment to something or to an idea, right, that I have become identified with, and then somebody is threatening. That's my image, right? So take pleasure in the practice of humility means take pleasure in exposing the fallacy of the image. Right, so if somebody is saying something and I'm becoming reactive to that, I have a wonderful opportunity to see the fallacy of my image. And not only that, but to see how much greater I am, not in relation to others, but how much greater we are as human beings.
Yeah, and bringing it back to what we talked about before, you know, how do you return it with that, you know, a different energy?
Yeah, it's transformative. Because when you transform that within you, you immediately begin to transform that in the way you express yourself with other people. Because you're not walking around worried about, you know, where will be the next arrow coming from, right? Defending all the time, putting shields in all directions. Walking around naked. No makeup, nothing. Here I am. I got nothing to gain, nothing to lose. Yeah, it's a beneficial way to be, right? Okay, anybody wants to have the last word?
Yeah.
Kakua.
I wanted to say what I was going to say last week, which was, it's funny because it brings it back to me, but my name, Kakuo, I was going to say this last week, I'll say it now. So kakul means awake, enlightened, free, if you will, and bol means response, you know, and Kiyo Roshi gave me that name because it's an awake response. She also called it a sober response. So kaku, sober, awake, enlightened, aware, selfless, all of those things. So I always try to live into my own name and how to do that. I guess it's by being not me, not David, you know, by just being just the response, kind of like an animal. You know, like if I were a monkey, how would I respond to any given situation? That doesn't always work, but you get it.
Right, thank you. Yes, so awake response, right? So the question, how to do that, right, has to do with what am I responding to, right? So if I'm responding to myself, it's a dormant response. It's not awake response because I'm responding to stale, to the old, to the sameness, right? To the repetitiveness. So awake response has everything to do with paying attention to what's happening, right? Which means putting what's happening above what I think about what's happening. That's primary, right? So what's happening is primary, me and my stuff, secondary, right? So then I respond to that, and then, so the response is awakened, right? Or awake, but also the situation is awakening me, right? Because it's awakening me from the dream of me, right? Every moment actually offers that, the same potential, right? To awaken me from me. Or my own story, because it's fresh, it's new, never before. So yeah, paying attention to other people, very important. Okay, thank you, to be continued.
By and opportunity is lost. Each of us must strive.